This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. And at Compass Catholic Ministries, we're going to show you how to remove any and all debt that you've accumulated. No matter how small the debt may be, or no matter how large your debt may be. And it really doesn't matter whether you earn a little or earn a lot. We use biblical principles to show you how God intends for all of us to be handling money. And there's no secrets to what we teach. Everything you need to know is right there in the Bible. And we'll point those principles out. Plus, we have practical applications. These are tools that we ask you to follow to help you rid yourself of the debt and manage your money better. The best part is that you can live a debt-free life. My name is Steve Holbrook, and joining me are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. And today's topic, we want to call leaky budgets. Now, I think you know where we're headed. So, Evelyn, let's see if we can help repair that leaky budget.
So, John, I was thinking about being at the beach and all the great things that you can do with the kids. And one of the things that came to mind is how a small child will go down to the ocean with their little bucket, and then they fill up their bucket with water, and they carry their bucket up the beach to where they're building their sandcastle. But once they get to the sandcastle and look into their bucket, half the water's gone. And when they look into the water remaining in their bucket, you can see the confused look on their faces while they try to figure out where the water went. Now, we can tell it either sloshed out because of the way they were carrying the bucket, or the bucket has a hole in it and a lot of the water simply leaked out. But they can't quite figure out where it went or what happened to it. You've seen that, right?
Yes, I've seen that. That experience reminds me of how some people have a leaky budget. At the beginning of the month, their bucket's full, but at the end of the month, it's empty, and they can't figure out where the money went.
Ruh-roh, what happened to the money?
But that's what we want to talk about today, how to find and fix the leaks in your budget. You know, a leak is defined as something escaping through a hole. So a budget leak means you have money escaping through a hole in your budget. Kind of makes sense, right?
It does.
If you're spending money on the same things over and over again without even thinking about how you're spending it or why and where it's going, it could be anything that you spend money on a regular basis, but you don't have any conscious thought about it. It could also be increased costs on items that you buy regularly, but you don't pay attention to the increase in price.
So finding and fixing those leaks is really part of being a good steward. You know, in Luke 16:11, we hear, "If you have not been faithful in the use of worldly wealth, who will entrust true riches to you?" So plugging those leaks in your budget helps you be a faithful steward in using your worldly wealth.
So today we want to talk about ways that you might have a leaky budget.
You know, one of the first things that comes to my mind, John, is the people that we've run into who use their salary, not their net income, to build their budget.
Yeah, but my salary's bigger.
Their salary is bigger, but you can't spend your whole salary.
So they're not taking into account the deductions like Social Security and retirement and taxes and all the other minuses that come out of your gross pay before your check is calculated.
That's exactly right, John. So when you build your budget, be sure to use your net salary after all the deductions. And if you're really being a good steward, the amount of money you're giving should also be subtracted before you know the net amount available for your monthly spending. We call that your net spendable income, right?
Yes, absolutely. So using estimated numbers for your spending when you create a budget can really cause a problem because they're estimated. The best way to build a budget is to track your spending for several months. Keep track of every penny and put it into a category so you know how much you've spent each month that you've been tracking in each category. And then use the amount that you spent for your estimated budget in that quarter after you've kept track of it for several months.
Otherwise, you're shooting in the dark and you're never going to hit the target. You know, we've had so many people who can't make ends meet because they're budgeting based on what they think they spend. But when they actually track their money, what they think they spend turns out to be a lot less than what they're actually spending.
You know, in the Bible study, the 9-week study,
Navigating
Your Finances God's Way, we asked everybody to track their money for at least 60 days. And every single class that we've ever done has had students come up to us after 60 days and said, I didn't realize how much money I was spending. I'm spending X number of dollars more than my income.
Or I'm spending X number of dollars more on this category than I really want to spend on that category. That's another big thing they find out.
Yep. Another thing that a lot of people fail to take into account is if they have variable income. Maybe they get one paycheck that's the same every single month, but maybe they have, you know, a part-time job or something like that, and the number of hours they work varies. Or maybe they're on a commission basis, and their commission varies month to month. If you've got that kind of a situation, you can't just add up everything that you've received and divide by 12, because you're going to set up a higher monthly average than what you're going to be able to maintain. The best way to handle that is to take and look at every one of your variable paychecks over the last 12 months and take the largest one and throw it out.
Don't include it in the average.
Yeah, you don't include that in the average. I mean, don't throw your check into the waste can, okay?
Yeah, like who gets checks anymore, right?
But take that highest amount, discard that, and then take the rest of the variable checks that you received and divide by 11. And that should give you a pretty good average income when you've got a variable income over the course of a year.
So that means on the months when you're a little bit higher, that money will be there on the months when you're a little bit lower on your income.
Yeah, having a higher month doesn't mean that you can spend it, because you're going to need it for the low month.
Yeah, it kind of averages out over the course of the year.
Precisely.
What about the same type of process on variable expenses? Does that work?
Yeah, you would do it pretty much the same way. You know, those things like, unless you pay your car insurance monthly, you know, most people will pay it quarterly or every 6 months. Some people will pay it annually. Real estate taxes, if you don't have them already escrowed into your mortgage payment, so you're paying the bank a prorated amount of your real estate taxes every month, you would count that. Vacation, auto repair, Christmas, you know, anything that only happens once in a while, but not every single month. And you would take 12, multiply the amount. Well, if it's an annual thing, you know, you multiply if you get paid 12 times, but then it becomes a monthly. So if it's a quarterly thing, take the 4 checks that you received, add them together, and then divide by 12.
The 4 bills you received. These are expenses.
These are expenses, yes. Yeah. So you would do the bills that you receive. If it's every quarter, or if it comes twice a year, add them together and divide by again, you want to divide by 12, because you want to create a monthly amount of money that you're going to save.
Because that'll allow you to build up that money so it's not a surprise. And that, in my opinion, is especially true on Christmas, because Christmas is such a huge expense for so many families. And if you're not planning for Christmas every month throughout the year, then when Christmas comes, it's a huge hit to your budget.
You mean Christmas comes every year?
It does, and a lot of people are surprised by that. But, you know, the best way to do that is to take those expenses and put them in a separate bank account or earmark them somehow specially in your bank account so that money's segregated from the money you can spend every month.
Yeah, you surely don't want to leave that in your checking account, because it will get spent.
So the goal is to have that money set aside once those expenses are due, so there's not a hit to your regular monthly expenses.
Right, right. Now, another thing that really can mess people up is bank fees. You know, there's still a lot of people that they go to the ATM and they don't pay attention to, you know, any old ATM will work for them because it's going to give them money. And they don't pay attention to who owns that ATM. And if it's not your bank, or it's a company that your bank recognizes and allows you to access your cash without charge, you're going to get a fee. And If it's just an out-of-network ATM, it might only be $5 or maybe $7, something like that. But
do that once a week for 52 weeks and it adds up.
That's a lot of money. That's right. That's right. And then the other thing about, you know, to access the ATM, you're accessing with your debit card. And so I know a lot of people will use their debit cards as a way of paying for things, of getting cash, whatever. They're treating it like a credit card, but it's not really a credit card, because with a credit card, you run up a balance and it's immaterial until the end of the month when you get the bill. But with your ATM card...
Or your debit card.
Or your debit card, yeah. You're not just running up a balance. You're subtracting from your checking or your savings account.
Right, as soon as you do the transaction.
As soon as you do it, okay? And it's a terrible thing, but most banks, as a courtesy, will give you the ability to say, please pay my ATM charge, even if I don't have any money in the bank.
Ah, that's a courtesy to you.
That's a courtesy. They're doing you such a favor. And for that favor, they're going to charge you $35 every single time it happens. So you go into McDonald's, you get a hamburger and a Coke and fries, and you spend $6. You don't have any money in your checking account, and that's where your ATM card, debit card comes from. And so now that hamburger, Coke, and fries that used to be $6 now cost you $41 because the bank added on $35 as a courtesy fee.
So you should really look at the agreement on your debit card or your ATM card and make sure you understand whether that convenience is there for you or not, because I can't think of any restaurant that I would go to where I'd spend $41 for a hamburger and a Coke.
Yeah. Not even in some of the fanciest New York restaurants would you have to pay that much.
I don't think I'd even spend $41 on a steak and a Coke.
And let's be realistic here. The bank is not being nice to you.
They are using you as a moneymaker, right?
Yeah, you are the bank's ATM machine.
I like that.
So make sure that you check your debit card agreement and understand the wording and how it applies to you in your specific situation as regards to overdraft fees.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. And all this talk about fixing your leaky budget, it's a great segue into an opportunity for me to tell you about our 9-week small group Bible study. It's called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. The Bible study is going to show you how to repair your budget, work your way out of debt, begin to save so you can live a debt-free life. Again, the name of the small group study is called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And you can preview this study at compasscatholic.org. Click on Books and Studies, and then click on Navigating Your Finances God's Way. If you like what you see and you think, wow, this is perfect for me or this is perfect for us, there's a contact form on the page. Fill it out, and we'll be in touch. Okay, John, let's move forward. When we work with couples, we hear what pressure is put on their monthly budget when they have mortgage insurance. Can you explain?
Well, Steve, you're right. Mortgage insurance can be a huge drain on your budget. And let's talk about what it is for a minute. It's PMI. You may hear that thrown around, or private mortgage insurance or whatever. But basically what it is when you buy a house, and if you don't put down 20%, at least 20%, then the mortgage company is going to require you to buy insurance to protect the mortgage company against you going bankrupt. Now, why don't the car insurers buy our car insurance to protect them, you know?
But wait. The mortgage people are not buying our mortgage insurance. We're buying it.
Yeah,
they're
I know,
just...
and we're protecting them. So the car insurance people should buy our automobiles, don't you think, Steve?
Yeah, you don't want to give them any ideas.
But we're still paying. They're buying it, but we're still paying for it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We're actually buying it.
We're buying it, yes. Yeah. So it's equal to 1% of the original loan amount. So as an example, if you have a brand new mortgage that's $100,000 and you only put down $10,000, so the mortgage itself is going to be written for $90,000, then you're going to have to pay 1% of $90,000 divided by 12 every month until your equity amount grows from 10% equity to 20% equity.
So it's that 80-20 rule that is when the PMI insurance goes away. 80% is what your mortgage value is worth, and 20% is the equity you have in the house.
When you don't have to pay insurance anymore.
Correct.
Yes.
So how do you get to that point?
Well, once the equity value increases to 80% of the original loan amount, you can ask the mortgage company to eliminate the PMI from your monthly payment. By law, the mortgage company is required to eliminate it when you hit 78%. So there's kind of a 2% flux in there that you could ask for it and they'll give it to you, or if you just wait, they're going to give it to you when you get 2% more.
But you should check to make sure they do eliminate it, because it's on you to talk to the bank.
Yes, and this is only for mortgages that are not FHA mortgages, because if you've got a new FHA mortgage, the way the FHA laws are, that's a lifetime payment. For the lifetime of the loan, you have to pay that 1%, even if you've got 50% equity. So if you're in that kind of a situation, you're going to want to refinance to get rid of it.
So part of it is refinancing. Part of it is understanding what your equity is in the house. And that may be influenced by how much you pay down, or it may be influenced by how much your housing value is worth, right?
Yeah. If you go back to that original house that you bought for $100,000, and let's say over the last 4 or 5 years, it's increased in value to say, let's say it's $115,000 now. Okay, so the house is worth $115,000. You originally had $10,000 of equity, but because of the increase in the value of the house of $15,000, now you have $25,000 of equity.
Maybe a little bit more since you've been making payments for a couple years.
Yeah, exactly. So now you have enough equity in the house to ask the mortgage lender to eliminate PMI.
Now, if I know mortgage lenders, since we've bought and sold 9 or 10 houses, they're going to want all kinds of documentation, or they're going to make you jump through certain hoops. You're not just going to be able to call them up and say, I have 20% equity in my house, so reduce my PMI to nothing. You'll have to do something to get rid of it.
You shake your magic wand.
That doesn't work with lenders.
So they don't go online and look at comps in your area?
No.
So it's all on you still?
It's all on the homeowner.
So you may have to pay for an appraisal in order to prove your point.
Oh, wow.
Which could be $500, $600, $700, depending on the appraiser. So you need to make sure that if that's the hoop you need to jump through, it's worth the effort and the time and the money. So you want to make sure you understand a good basis for what the houses are worth in your area before you go through that.
And depending on, you know, when you got your loan and the rate that you got your loan at, it may behoove you to just refinance and get rid of the PMI and possibly even lower your monthly payment. We know a family that just did that. They were trying to get rid of PMI, and they wanted to get appraisal. They wanted to do this and that, and their rate was about 5%, I think, which, you know, that's in historically, that's a great rate, but in today's world, it's not that good. And so they were able to refinance, and not only did they eliminate $130 of a month of PMI cost, but they were able to reduce their monthly payment on the principal by close to another $100 or $150. So it ended up saving them maybe $250, $280 a month. Now, please understand that refinancing isn't free. You know, that's going to cost you some money. And depending on the mortgage company you go with and all their factors, you know, it might be as much as $2,500 or $3,000. But, you know, you're reducing your payment significantly in most cases. And if that's the case, you might be able to justify that.
And just think of how fast you'll pay off your mortgage if you take that reduced payment, the official reduced payment, and pay ahead on your mortgage.
So like the family that we were talking about, if they've got an extra $250, that now that they don't have to pay, but they've been paying it, they're used to paying it, and if they can roll that into the principal payment,
then that'll just get rid of their mortgage much faster.
Yeah, they'll reduce their principal by maybe as much as half over the course of the mortgage.
Okay, what's another way to stem a leaky budget? What's another place where our budget is leaking on us?
How about auto insurance? That's one that Steve, I know you've experienced quite a bit of change in the cost of policies.
We go in fact, we were just there three weeks ago, just going through all the policies that we have. And you know these gadgets that you can put in your car and monitors your driving, how fast you drive, you turn right, left, braking hard? With the company, I just popped it in yesterday, and we're each of our cars will save a total, doing a quick math in my head, one is $48 each 6 months, and the other one was $37. So that's $70, $80.
$150
over the course of the year.
Yeah.
It's just saving because of that gadget. I want to test this.
Wait a minute. It doesn't have anything to do with raising your rates if you go faster.
That's what she said. If we notice that you're going 80 in a 70 mile an hour zone on a consistent basis on the highway, it will not change your rate at all.
Sounds like Big Brother watching your little car.
Oh, it definitely is Big Brother. But I thought it was interesting, and I love technology like that. So I just yesterday put it in the thing, so I'm monitoring Audrey's driving habits.
And does Audrey know that you're monitoring her driving habits?
Hey, she's off for it, kind of, sort of.
And is she monitoring your driving habits?
Knowing her, she can if she wants. I doubt if she will.
What is it, just a little box, or how, like, where does it go?
It's just thrown in the glove compartment.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well,
I'll show
you. It's not hooked up electronically to anything.
No, it's Bluetooth.
So I can't get it out of his glove box, put it in my car, and drive like a fool.
No,
and
it'll
you
recognize.
Can, but if your wife's in the car with you, that's going to be a problem. What about always buying name brands instead of doing a generic brand or a store brand? You know, if you do some quick research by comparing ingredient labels before making your final decision, you may be able to save some serious money by going with generic brands. And that goes for everything from food to clothes to cleaning supplies, cosmetics, and even prescription drugs.
Yeah, I know that when I buy a shirt, it's going to last 10 years, typically. And at the end of 10 years, it's going to have holes in it. It's going to have food stains on it. It's probably going to have some paint on it and maybe some oil or grease. And it's not going to be worth a hoot. And it doesn't matter if I paid $15 for that shirt or I bought it at some really fancy golf shop, not that I would, and paid $150 for it.
Yeah, I'd like to see you pay $150 for a shirt.
Really, I could help you out on that.
All right, what about food? How do you save on food?
Well, I think that if you eat at home, you're going to save on food as opposed to going out and eating at a restaurant or someplace like that. And, you know, I've learned over the years that if we just cook twice as much, then we can get maybe two meals out of it or three meals out of it.
As long as we don't eat twice as much.
That can happen sometimes, too.
All right, what about credit card interest and fees? You know, that's one of our hot buttons, is paying credit card interest when you don't pay off your credit card at the end of the month. It just really is a waste of money for you to be paying interest on those credit cards.
Absolutely, I agree. If you can't pay off your credit card debt every single month, you don't have the right to be using your credit card.
Amen, brother.
I mean, that's pretty, and I know that's a pretty harsh statement, but you are going to get into such trouble, and you probably already are, okay? I mean, this isn't new news to you. This isn't a news flash. The average family has about $15,000 or $16,000 of credit card debt. So you need to stop now. Start putting money in an envelope, put those credit cards away, and get the bills paid off.
And the last thing we're going to talk about is creeping prices. I remember several years ago, you were really frustrated with how much your haircuts were going up, John, and you came home with a thing of clippers and said, "You're going to learn to cut my hair." And I about had a fit. But we did it, and you still look presentable, right?
Well, we've been doing that now since, I think, 1994 was when we started that.
And your hair hasn't changed at all since then.
And it cost me two sets of clippers, so it cost me about a total of about $75.
Over that long time.
Since 1994. So what is that, 25 years almost? 23 or something?
That was a big money saver.
So I get my hair cut for about a dollar a time.
And no tip either.
And no tips, that's right.
So to some extent, almost all of your expenses are negotiable. You know, food, clothing, and shelter are needs, but everything else is optional. But the more disciplined you are, the more you can avoid budget leaks. And avoiding a leaky budget helps you be a better steward of all the blessings God's given you.
Amen, sister.
The big takeaway is start by tackling all, I mean all of your spending, no matter if it's small items or large items, they all add up. Next step is to put together a spending plan, a monthly budget. This is the primary way that you're going to be able to work your way out of debt and plan for your future. Well, that about does it for us. We do appreciate you listening. Just a reminder, we post a brand new podcast each and every Wednesday morning. This has been Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministries.